How's everyone today? Everyone's well? Yeah, that's a trick question. If you're well, why are you here? You should be at home relaxing. You should only be here if you're suffering.
You're better
all the time. You better? Okay, good, excellent.
Yeah.
Good, excellent.
Good.
Yeah, as long as it's real.
More and more.
So, just came back from Indonesia where I spoke at the Sakyadita conference on Buddhist women. So even though I'm not a woman, I'm wearing a skirt, so I sort of snuck in. I don't think anybody noticed. And it's amazing actually. It was in Jakarta, in Yogyakarta. And 1,000 people, right? And from all different countries. It's amazing. It's incredibly diverse. People from Bhutan and Bangladesh and Sri Lanka and India and America and all over. Yeah. So I came and discussed various issues and so on. And so one of the things that seeing all those people there reminded me of, I was quite interested to see, you know, who is it that goes to a conference on Buddhist women in Indonesia? And it was very interesting to see such an incredibly diverse array of people, and yet they all sort of found something to bring them together through the Dhamma. And one of the things that I have been whinging about recently is about how there's a great lack of diversity in how meditation is presented. So I don't know when you go home, you can try this. You just go to Google Images and you search for meditation. Yeah? And what that tells you is that all meditators are young, slim, pretty, most of them are blonde, most of them are women, and they always sit meditation on beaches and hillsides and mountaintops. So, of course, meditation is for everyone, and you know, even for the old and fat and ugly people like you lot. I couldn't resist. And disabled as well. So one of the things that I started, and I just mentioned this because you might want to discuss it with yourselves whether it's something you'd like to do, but at my meditation groups in Sydney, what I've done is during the meditation group, we ask people's permission first, and then we just took photos of people while they were meditating, and you know, whatever kind of goofy grin that they had on their face, or you know, bits of drool coming out of the side of their mouth, And then we have a hashtag, Faces of Meditation, right? And so you can take the photos and then just upload them to the hashtag Faces of Meditation, and just to sort of try to promote the idea that actually meditation is for everyone. So maybe something that you'd be interested to, I'm just throwing it out there as a suggestion, if at some point you're interested to do that, and I think that's a useful thing to do. Because one of the things that was very characteristic about the Buddha was that the Buddha taught everybody. And he taught the rich, and he taught the poor, he taught the lepers, he taught the prostitutes, he taught the kings and the generals, and he taught the idiots and the smart people. And he didn't make any distinction. Yeah? Anybody who came to him, he'd just try to help them. And when the Buddha was teaching in ancient Indian society, like any society, there's a lot of discrimination, of course. Yeah? And people who were women were treated very badly. People from lower castes were treated very badly. There was racism based on skin color. All these kinds of discrimination, many of which we're familiar with today. I'm very happy that in our society we're moving gradually towards a place of having less discrimination. And while we were in Indonesia, there was, coincidentally, while the Supreme Court was giving its decision in the US on same-sex marriage, there was was actually a conference, a panel on lesbian and gay issues at the Sankirtita conference while that decision was being deliberated. So I suggested that perhaps, you know, I don't know if there was a causal link between one or the other, but anyway. But it was very nice for me to see that, you know, here we were in Indonesia, and you could see that even in a, you know, a country which is a majority Muslim country and which doesn't have very progressive social attitudes in many ways, but still that topic could be discussed and received very, very positively and very warmly. So it's important that in Buddhism and in our communities, in our meditation groups, that we're welcoming and friendly, and that everybody should feel okay about coming along, and nobody should feel excluded or left out. And the core of the thing, the most important thing that the Buddha said, was that meditation, he used the word vedyamanasa. Vedyamanasa, it means for one who feels. Yeah? For one who feels. And this is really the key to everything, right? The one who feels. And so our meditation, our spiritual life, is not about the fact that, you know, I'm a Buddhist or I'm not a Buddhist, or I'm in this, you know, I'm Thai or Sri Lankan or Indian or Australian, and we're a man and woman and gay or straight or any of these kinds of things. None of those things matter. All that matters is, do you feel? Yeah? So anybody who has feelings should be meditating, okay? So of course that excludes Australian males, but anyway. Only kidding. Only kidding. Mostly. And so so this is what we're doing when we're sitting to meditate. So meditation is based on just awareness, that's all. There's nothing about meditation which is nothing esoteric, there's nothing particularly special, really. It's not kind of about invoking some god or some spiritual power, or there's nothing weird about it or anything. It's just very simple. All that meditation is that it's based on the principle that our mind is conditioned. That's all. Our mind is conditioned. Things affect our mind. We all know that, right? Conditions affect our mind. If you go into a very busy place, you get distracted and stressed and annoyed and so on, and then you go to a very peaceful place and your mind becomes more peaceful. It's conditions. The conditions are affecting your mind, okay? So that's the basic principle of meditation. So what we do is that we create or we nurture a set of conditions which are going to be helpful for leading our mind towards peace and towards clarity. Okay? That's all that meditation is. We're nurturing a set of conditions that is useful for leading the mind towards peace and clarity. Right? So that's why when we sit and we take time to be still, we take time to sit in a meditation posture. You can see here, most people are meditating on chairs. Whether you meditate on a chair or meditate on the floor doesn't matter too much. But the only thing is that you should be comfortable while you're meditating. Okay, reasonably comfortable, not so comfortable you're going to fall asleep, okay? But comfortable enough that you're not struggling with your body, okay? So be a friend of your body while you're meditating, okay? Your body is not your enemy, yeah? So when you sit down, you make I'll just give some of the reminder of some of the basic principles of meditation. First thing is, what is the time? Okay, we make a time to meditate. So here we have meditation group, we have a set time, we know that. We begin at one point, we end at one point. So it's always very useful to create a time for yourself to meditate. It helps you to create boundaries. It helps you to leave things behind. All right? The same thing with creating a space. Right? So again, here we've created a space we've come to meditate in. So it's very good to try to do that. If you can, and we don't always have the option, but if you can, you try to meditate in a place that's a little bit separate from where you do your work or where you do your other things, right? So you have a space that you can go to, maybe in your home. It might just be a corner of a room, right? You know, sometimes you can, you know, it depends on your circumstances, how easily you can do that. But you know, it might just mean lighting a candle or something like that. But you create a space at a time that's going to give you some sense of safety, some sense of being contained, right? So that we can go into that meditation and we can leave everything behind, right? So remember, meditation is not the time for solving all your problems, right? It's not the time for analyzing all of your worries and anxieties. It's not the time for planning what you're going to do tomorrow and all of those things. So by setting up some boundaries and some containers, we help our mind to be able to let go of those things. And at the same time, we also give your mind the permission to feel anything. Right? Now normally we can't do that. Right? Because normally you have to do this four-letter word. Okay? This four-letter word. What do we have to do? We have to cope. Right? And so that's what you have to do. You have to cope somehow. You have to get up in the morning. You have to get to work. You have to wash your clothes. You have to get the shopping done. And the coping. And you just get by. And you can't be at work and then break out in tears. Well, you can, but it's not going to be very useful, right? You can't just suddenly start laughing while you're just pushing a trolley down the shopping aisle in the shopping centre, right? Well, you can, but people are going to think you're very strange, right? But you can do all those things in meditation, okay? And you probably will sooner or later. At some point you'll cry. At some point you'll laugh. At some point you'll feel itchy. At some point you'll feel depressed. At some point you'll feel something that's so weird that you don't even have a name for it. Right? That's what it means. Vedya manasa, for one who feels. So when you sit in the meditation, you allow yourself to feel all of those different things. It's okay. So any of those things happen, it's okay. You don't have to cope. You don't have to be anybody. You certainly don't have to be a good meditator. If there is such a thing, right? Just accept everything. Just, it's okay. It's just part of being human. If you feel angry, it's alright. Anger is alright. Don't worry about being angry. So many times people say, how do I deal with anger? How do I deal with anger? Anger is a part of you. Right? You say, oh, people want to get rid of their anger. Why do you want to get rid of your anger for? You want to get rid of part of yourself. Why? Because you're angry at your anger. Right? Well, people say, oh, you know, I want to get rid of greed. I don't want to be so greedy. I want to be able to be more restrained, you know. Well, why don't you like your greedy to be without greed? This is crazy, right? That's not the path of Dhamma. The path of Dhamma is to accept. And the first thing you accept is that all of these things are part of who you are, right? So these things are okay. The Buddha talked about greed, hatred, and delusion, right? These things. But these things are not... There's no concept in Buddhism, right? There's no concept of like evil or sin or something like that, right? There's nothing is intrinsically wrong in and of itself, okay? The only thing is that they lead to suffering, right? Ah, that's the point, yeah? There's nothing wrong with anger, okay? Except you know that when you get angry, it's going to make you suffer. That's it. That's all. It's about what is the cause and effect, what's the consequences of it, yeah? So it's not that these things are sort of intrinsically bad and we have to get rid of it. It's just we have to understand them. You understand when your mind's angry, oh, it'll tend to lead you towards suffering. When you let go of that anger, oh, your mind is peaceful and you don't suffer. That's all. And when you notice that, then you'll find, as you do that again and again and again, like I said before, you're creating the conditions that lead your mind towards peace. So if you notice that again and again and again and again, right? Don't expect, you know, great things from doing just one or two meditations and so on. You do it over a long period of time. And you'll notice that those roots of anger tend to come up less and less. The mind tends to be more and more content. The mind tends to be more and more clear. There's less confusion in the mind. So this is what we're looking for in meditation. Nothing spectacular. Nothing mystical, nothing out of the ordinary. Just looking at what in our mind is leading to suffering and what is leading to happiness. That's all. Okay? So for for this evening's meditation. In a few minutes we're going to do some guided meditation, and you're going to vote on what meditation we're going to do. I'll give you three choices. And unlike conventional elections, these will actually be like different things that you vote for. Number one, loving-kindness meditation. Okay. Number two, breath meditation. And number three, mindful awareness meditation. Okay, there's your three choices. Only one of them. No cheating and voting for two, okay? Okay, who wants to do loving-kindness meditation? Okay, right. Breath meditation. About the same. And mindful awareness meditation. Oh, mindfulness wins. Did we have a few doubles there? I think we might have had a few doubles. Anyway, okay. Okay. Okay, so this kind of meditation, and I'll just talk about it for 5 minutes before we begin the meditation. And this kind of meditation, sometimes called Vipassana meditation, in Zen Buddhism they call it Chan or Zazen, and in the Tibetan tradition they call it Dzogchen, I think. Well, it's like a tradition they do in the practice, they do in the Dzogchen practice. Anyway, all the different Buddhist traditions have some kind of meditation which is very similar to the meditation that I'm going to be teaching. And so the purpose of this meditation is simply to be aware. All right. Of course, all meditation is about mindful awareness, right? So, you know, that's part of all meditations. But here we're going to focus just on being aware. We're not going to be trying to watch our breath. We're not going to be developing loving kindness or anything like that. It's just going to be open and accepting and letting everything coming in, okay? And so this meditation is... it's a very powerful meditation, but I should just give a little warning, or just, you know, for so you understand, one of the limitations of this meditation, because you don't have like a meditation subject, like the breath or something like that, which is like an anchor to ground your meditation. So in this kind of practice, you tend to find your mind doesn't get so peaceful. Okay, so the main purpose of this meditation is not to make your mind peaceful. Hopefully it will get more peaceful, right? I'm not saying it won't, but that's not the main purpose. The main purpose is to increase the clarity of your awareness. Okay? And so to do this practice, we essentially just sit, we ground our mindfulness in our body, and then we become aware of whatever's happening. And I'll give a few more instructions on that as we go, but that's the basic practice. Okay, any quick questions on that meditation before we begin? Okay. So sitting quietly. inside your body. Focusing on the sensations that you can experience in the different parts of your body, starting with the pressure of the seat as you're sitting there. Just spend a little bit of time just paying attention to that sensation. Hey, what does it feel like to be sitting? Move your mind gently around the different parts of the body, and just see what you're experiencing, the physical sensations at the moment. Maybe you feel like your feet resting on the ground, or maybe there's like the feeling of the cloth on your skin. So often these physical sensations, we lose touch with them. We don't know where our body is. Also the sounds outside, the distant sound of traffic, not much noise, but just a few noises, sounds, people shifting or the things moving around. You just listen to those. about this and that. Don't worry about it. Don't try to stop the thinking. Don't try to get rid of it. Just be aware of it. Oh, okay. That's what I'm thinking about. Bring a sense of kindness and compassion to that. Where does the thinking come from? Why is it that we're thinking about that? If you look closely, you'll see that the thinking always comes from some tension. Something unsettled. So if you try to get rid of the thinking, you just create more tension. So instead, just relax, accept it, be aware of it. Have compassion. Have loving kindness for those thoughts. Every thought that happens in your mind is part of who you are. So treat yourself with kindness. Treat your thoughts with kindness. Finished moving your mind around the body, if you like, you can just bring your center of awareness back and let it just rest in your heart. Keep your awareness there and just watch and listen and wait. If you feel some pain in your meditation, then it's okay to pay attention to that. Bring your mind to the painful spot. It might be very small pain, like an itch. Or it might be something that's quite large. It might be something that's just in your mind, or it might be a genuine physical problem. And either way, it doesn't matter. You can bring your attention to it. Pay attention, watch. As you hold that painful feeling in awareness for a little while, you'll notice that it becomes not so solid. You try to look for it and you find that it's not quite there anymore. It's hard to pin it down. And it changes from moment to moment. It's like a It's not like a solid thing. It's like a river or a breeze. It's always shifting. And you can like taste that feeling of what the pain feels like. You realize, actually, it's only pain. It's okay. I've felt pain before. It's alright, I'm still here. I feel pain again. It's not really anything to be afraid of. It's just a sensation. It's there for a while. It's not very nice, that's true, but that's alright. And then it changes and shifts, and then after a while it's not there anymore. So why is it that I'm so worried about pain? Why is it that we make such a big deal about it? And after you've spent some time with that painful feeling, getting to know it a bit, then turn away from it. Don't let your meditation be only about pain. Don't be afraid of the pain, but also don't be obsessed with it. Stay with it long enough until you get a sense for where it is, how it feels, you see the impermanence of it. Then you, okay, that's enough. Turn your mind from that painful feeling and watch something that's just neutral or something that's pleasant. As we're practicing with awareness in this way, remember that it's not about analyzing feelings, it's not about thinking about them, certainly not about solving them or changing them. It's just about knowing them, just quietly watching. Give a simile sometimes, like you're sitting by a pool in the forest, and it's been a very hot day, and at the end of the hot day you just sit quietly beside the pool, and all of these wonderful strange creatures come out of the forest to have a drink of cool water. You don't have to go looking for them. You don't have to do anything special. You just be quiet and watch. And they will come out and you see all these amazing things were living in that forest. And it's the same thing in your mind. If you can be settled and quiet, and just watch. Sometimes the most amazing things will come out. Without you doing anything about it. It's not you making anything happen. And sometimes maybe a problem that's been worrying you, you suddenly see through it. A decision that you've been wanting to make, suddenly you realize what the right thing to do is. Some grudge you've been holding on to, and suddenly you just let go of it. You don't do any of these things, they just happen. But they happen because we've set the conditions for them. Take the time to notice the peacefulness. No matter how much stuff is happening in your mind, there's always some space no matter how quickly the thoughts come tumbling one after the other, there's always a gap between them. No matter how many uncomfortable or painful or other sensations you feel in the body, there's always some spaces that just feel empty. And so just as we spend some time focusing on the painful feeling, we spend some time giving attention to our thoughts and trying to understand them. In the same way, spend some time to pay attention to the quiet. Ask yourself, what right now is peaceful? What right inside myself right now is quiet? You pay careful attention, you'll always notice that there's something peaceful. And this reminds us that these things that we're looking for, peace, contentment, they're not very far away. It's not something that just other people have. It's something that's present in each one of you right now. now coming to the end of the meditation. And just before we finish, take a minute to look back over the practice that we've done. Ask yourself, what was that like? How did my mind change? What did it feel like? What things happened? What's my mind like now compared to how it was at the start of the meditation? So it's a good idea to reflect like that for a minute or two at the end of every meditation. It helps you to learn and understand about how your practice is going. And finally, we can dedicate the merit of our practice. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize Nirvana. You can open your eyes and gradually come out of meditation. Waiting for the voices from heaven to voice up. God's a bit late today. It's 8 o'clock, isn't it?
It could always be the clock is fast.
Uh-huh.
And sort of very late.
Sorry? Do we have any questions in the basket today? No questions. Question out the back. Yes.
What should we do if we get a song stuck in our head while we're measuring?
Me too.
Songs stuck in your head. Well, first thing is that you can have a thought of congratulations to the songwriter, right? Because I used to be write songs, right? And so one of the things that you try to do when you're writing songs is precisely to do that, right? You try to write something that's going to get stuck in people's heads. Yeah? That's what they call it a hook. Yeah, that's what you call it in music. You write some kind of hook, yeah? So it's going to get into your brain and latch there and not go out. So if you're sitting there meditating and you think you want to be peaceful and the song comes up, so normally, you know, rather than trying to push it away or something, you just have a thought, oh, congratulations, songwriter, you did a good job. It's now stuck in my head. Yeah? But there's a way of thinking about it, rather than reacting negatively or trying to push it away, you have a positive response. Oh, okay, oh, that's nice, yeah, good on you. Because you have a positive response, that helps you to let go. But if it keeps on going, well, this one story I heard about that was a story from forest monks. See, these things happen to monks as well. And there was once there was a monk meditating in the forest next to a stream. And every day he would meditate and the stream would be rushing by and gurgling and bubbling and so on. And then another monk walked past his hut and he saw this monk in the middle of the stream moving the rocks around the stream. And he said, "What on earth are you doing?" He said, "I'm just sick of hearing the same song every day." Actually, you know, because I was a musician, so my first meditation retreat, there we go. Thank you. My first retreat, and sitting there, and it was a very intensive retreat, you know, meditating like 12 hours a day or something like that, and so your mind gets quite bright. And at one point, you know, I started like hearing this incredible music in my head, right? It was like nothing I'd ever heard before. And it was just sort of going on and on, it was kind of developing, going into all of these different things, and I knew that I shouldn't be doing that, but it was just so good that I couldn't stop it. I was like, wow, if only I could, you know, have a pen and paper, I could write this down, you know, it'd be this great piece of music. And then after a while, I realized that it was just the noise of the fan in my room going around. That was, and I thought it was such a great piece of music. So this is all stuff coming from your mind, that's all. Yeah, so it's just your mind. And if your mind wants to pick up a piece of music and play with it, it'll do that for a while. You just be patient. Don't worry about it too much. And just let it go. Don't try to get rid of it. Don't try to hold on to it. It's okay. It's just a piece of music. Yeah. They are remarkably tenacious, aren't they? Yeah. Even, you know, being a monk for so many years, you still get, you know, pieces of melody or something come up in your mind. Yeah.
Is it possible to gain relief from constant pain through meditation?
Is it possible to gain relief from constant pain through meditation? Yes and no. Well, certainly meditation can help to manage pain. There's a number of things that meditation can do, and it depends, partly depends on what kind of pain it is. Right, so you know, pain is a complex thing. It's not simple. It has mental and physical aspects to it. So obviously, the meditation can deal with the mental aspects of the pain. So it can deal with your anxiety about the pain, and the anxiety about the pain can sometimes make the pain itself worse. Right. So because you're worrying about it all the time, you get tired about it.
I'm worried about it all the time.
Doesn't
worry me.
Doesn't worry you?
No, I know it's there all the time. It's constant.
Okay. So far has meditation done anything to change that?
Temporarily,
yeah.
Only for a little while.
Yeah.
Injections.
Yeah.
But then that eases after a while. I didn't know if there was literature available or whether you can, you know, meditate.
Yeah.
Practicing. Make yourself feel better.
Yeah, I mean, the in some cases, meditation does have a healing effect. There's no doubt about that, and that's been shown. Like, for example, they've shown that meditation can actually repair frayed ends of your DNA, things like that. So it definitely has some kind of physical effects, which can relieve some kinds of pain, but equally, obviously, not all kinds of pain. The Buddha still had got a backache, right? One of the things I like about the Buddha, he had a sore back. Yeah. And so now if your meditation is really good, then you can go into really deep samadhi and you don't feel anything, right? So that's good. Yeah. But if you're not quite there yet, then certainly meditation can help you to manage it, right? So it helps you to get more equanimity about it, have a better attitude towards it, not be helps you to not be kind of dominated by it. You know, it's just pain. It's all right.
So, practice meditation.
Think of the strategy that I gave in that mindful meditation just now, where you like alternate between periods of watching the pain, yeah, maybe 5 minutes, something like that, and just enough time to sort of get to know it well, right? And by watching it, what you do is you see through it, you see the impermanence of it, but also you kind of, you let go of any fear that you might have about it, any resistance to it. You spend some time, it's alright, it's just pain. But then, also then spend the next 5 minutes not watching the pain. Yeah? So you don't alternate between watching it for a while and not watching it for a while. And that gives your mind like a strength of mind to be able to accept it and to deal with it without being controlled by it. Show the pain who's boss. Yeah. See, sometimes when you're meditating, it's like your mind gravitates towards it, like you want to watch the pain. You can't not feel the pain, right? You know? But that shows that the pain's in charge. Right? If all you can focus on is pain, the pain is controlling you, right? So you've got to let the pain know you're not the boss. Yeah. So that's the best strategy that I've found for doing it. Okay, seems we're doing Q&A at the moment, so any questions? Go on.
I thought you were shooting through for 18 months.
Sorry, what?
I thought you were shooting through for a retreat for 18 months.
I am, yeah.
Very pleased to see you, not.
I am.
Oh.
Yeah.
When?
Starting in August.
Perhaps you can tell us something about that.
Oh dear, okay, well, okay. I'm shooting through for 18 months. Okay, yeah, so I'm going on 18 months sort of sabbatical / retreat starting in August. Actually, the Buddhist Society is having a conference. I'm sure you've been promoting it here, the Global Conference on Buddhism. In August, that was it, the 8th and 9th, I think, of August. Yeah. So that's going to be good, and I'm going to be one of the presenters there. And in fact, when they were putting it together, I made a suggestion for a panel, and they put that panel together because of my suggestion. So, and then they said, actually, I want to go on retreat. Can I skip it? And they sort of looked at me not very kindly. Well, no, they were very kind. But anyway, so I'm here to do it. Anyway, I'm doing a panel which is all about artificial intelligence and robots and cyborgs. Yeah. And it features a man called Guy Benary, right? Among other freaky things. We've got one guy who's a cyborg, right? He's got artificially enhanced senses. Another one is growing an ear on his arm.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Another one has, what he's done is he's a researcher at UWA. He's taken some of his skin cells and then he's reverted them back to stem cells and then grown them into neurons. Right? Which he then cultivates in a petri dish, with electrodes embedded in them. Okay, so it's his own brain growing in a jar. And then the electrodes are then hooked up to a synthesizer, and they can make noises. And musicians come and play with it. So his own brain is making music in a jar. And when I saw that, I went into the university and I saw it, and he showed me the petri dish with his brain growing in it, and I said, you won't believe this, but I used to be a musician and we used to sing a song called A Brain in a Jar. We did.
Creation.
And now you can sing a song with a brain in a jar. That's progress. So anyway, so we're doing all of these cool things. So this is all to sort of look at what's going to happen in the future, developments in technology, what are the implications, what are the ethical implications. Does it mean, for example, you could grow a backup brain? Right? In case you have an accident or something like that, right? We could make backup organs, keep them in storage, yeah? I mean, these things sound like they're completely crazy, but actually it's not that bad an idea, is it? When you think about it, maybe you get some brain damage or something and then you can graft some neurons on and they will... Yeah? I don't know. So these are the kinds of things which might be possible. So what happens then if you grow your own brain in a jar? Is that you? Maybe. And you can keep replacing all your bits, right? Right? might be mind-boggling for you, but if you grew yourself a new brain, it might not be mind-boggling for your new brain.
Everything is there in the DNA, and you can pick it out in the stems. Then you can do everything to renew your body.
Hmm. That's right. Yeah.
Everything, not only the ear, etc.
Yeah. Yeah. How does it fit into global Buddhism? You might not have heard me correctly. What I said was, he's got a brain in a jar. No, it's just kind of awesome, so I thought we'd do a panel on it. They said, can you do one on managing anger? I said, oh, that's so boring. Everyone does it on managing anger. Can we do it on cyborgs and artificial intelligence? Sorry, you had a question earlier.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Which researcher?
His name's Guy Benary, the one who's growing the brain in the jar. Yeah, he's at UWA, yeah. It's about, it's about the kind of, partly it's about like the kind of looking at the ethical issues, cultural issues, like all things like sense of identity and sense of self, right? You can imagine, I mean, just take that example, simple example. Imagine that you had an accident and your brain was damaged, right? But then you've got a backup, you know, some tissue, you can take that and help yourself to heal. So that's fine. But how much of that can you do while still being you, right? I mean, you could maybe replace 5% and it's probably okay, but can you replace 50% of your brain? You know? So these are the kinds of questions that's not something that has a definitive answer, but there's just something to look at how Dhamma can give it a context, because, you know, scientifically these things are progressing, and, you know, there are ethical choices that need to be made. You know, there's one that was just proposed about a week or two ago now, where they're going to actually go ahead with the world's first head transplant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or body transplant, depending on your point of view, right? Right? And so they proposed this, like, you know, 6 months ago or something, and then they actually got a volunteer now, and they're actually going to go ahead and do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, but there are many implications. I mean, one issue, right, is that we can make a whole bunch of laws and ethics and stuff like that. Fine, I'll just go somewhere else and do it, right? I mean, there's lots of countries in the world where they'd be happy to host some medical research, you know. So these things, they do, you know, there is a sense in which it's hard to put the lid back on the bottle once you've got that ability, yeah. So, I mean, generally speaking, my feeling is that with these things, it's to try to sort of ban them or prevent them is usually, in most cases, is not very useful. But the best thing is to, well, how do you manage it in a positive way? You know, they are technologies that can have benefits. So what things do we need to bear in mind? Anyway, so that's the panel. But anyway, so that was just really by the by. Anyway, after the panel, I'm going on this retreat. Just to let you, well, to give you the background, for the last 20 years or something like that, I've been a Buddhist monk. Actually, before I was a monk, the first thing I did was I went to a retreat center in Chiang Mai called Wat Ran Burn, and I did a month-long retreat where we just did mindfulness, right? Just walking meditation, sitting meditation all day, every day. One of the interesting things about that retreat was that they basically didn't teach you anything, right? Very, very little. They told you how to meditate, and then you'd sort of come in every day and you'd be like, you know, oh, it's so painful, and my back was sore, and my legs were sore, and this was bad, and that was bad, and I was crying, and this was happening. And then they'd nod and they'd say, okay, we'll just note it and go back and do it again tomorrow. And so that was actually very good, because it was all about your own experience, right? So that was my first real introduction to Buddhism, was like through the meditation and through the experience of meditation. And when that retreat finished, I asked, you know, can I, because you couldn't read books on that retreat, right? So I asked, is there any books that I can read, right? And so they gave me one or two Dhamma books to read, and I read these Dhamma books and I thought, meh, they're all right. didn't find anything that interesting. And then I thought, where's, I asked them, where's like the real stuff? And so then they pointed me to the Buddha's own teachings in the suttas. And so in Buddhism we have, like most major religions, we have our own canonical collection of literature and texts, and they contain the actual teachings of the Buddha. Right? And of course many of the things that we hear today spoken about the Buddha are not really taught by the Buddha. And in fact, there's one of my favourite websites, is a website called fakebuddhistquotes.com. Yeah? So you can go on to fakebuddhistquotes.com, and he has very nice discussions and analysis of different kind of quotes and things that people attribute to the Buddha. And he often can sort of trace it and find out where it actually came from. Right? And so, but we do have the things which are taught by the Buddha, and when I first read these, I just fell in love with them. And so this has always been the two things which has been most sort of guiding and inspiring to me in the last 20-something years is my meditation practice and studying and reading the suttas, the teachings of the Buddha. So in recent years, I've been developing a website called Sutta Central, and Sutta Central is the first website ever, or the first resource ever, that really brings together all of the early Buddhist texts in all different languages. We have text in Pali, Chinese, Sanskrit and Tibetan, and now we have on Sutta Central also translations in about 30 modern languages. Right? So altogether we have roughly, I think it's about 60 million words in 30 something languages. So this has been a kind of a labour of love for myself to put this website together and to develop it with a small group of people. But one of the limitations that we have is that we don't have freely available translations of the Buddha's teachings in English, which is kind of nuts. Right? It's kind of nuts. There are translations, but they're either old or not very good, or they're under copyright and we can't publish them on the web. So we need a translation which is freely available. And the other problem with many of the translations is that they are in somewhat difficult English. And so in the world today, by far the greatest number of people who speak English speak it as a second language. There are so many people all throughout Asia and all throughout the world who are learning English, and for us who may be a native speakers, we can read things and it's okay. You know, we can read stuff and it's easy enough. But if you're trying to learn a language, then just little things, some vocabulary that you don't know or an idiom that you're not familiar with, makes it so much harder to read. So one of the things I want to do is to make a new translation which will be complete and consistent and accurate and simple English and freely available, and nothing like that exists at the moment. So I went through, I actually negotiated with publishing houses for more than a year to try to get the translations they have, and I couldn't. So at the moment the Buddha's teachings are owned by a corporation, which I think there's something wrong with that. I thought maybe we could like make a petition or something like that and get them to release it and things, but nah, I'll just do it myself. So now I thought, okay, now what I can do is I now have a perfect excuse to spend a couple of years doing exactly what I wanted to do anyway. So what I've done is that I've arranged to basically take a retreat for, I'm guessing, 18 months. But it's completely open-ended. I don't have really anything planned for after that. So I'm guessing 18 months, during which time I'll be just doing two things, translating and meditating. And I hope to be able to translate all of the early Buddhist texts, what they call the Four Nikayas, is the main body of early Buddhist texts, from Pali to English during that period. That's about 1 million words I have to translate. So that'll be fun. And I'm doing it on a little island called Chimay. Some people have said to me, I heard that you're going to Ireland. No, I'm going to an island. Oh, okay. The island called Chimay, which is an island off the coast of Taiwan. It's halfway between China and Taiwan. And there's some of my long-term students in Penang have a little holiday home there, so I'm just going to go and stay there, and they'll help to look after me for that period. And so, yeah, anyway, so that's what I'm going to be doing.
Are you still going to do your blog?
I will not be blogging or anything. No.
Blogging?
I won't be blogging. I'll be disblogged. Is that a word? I'll be once I'm set up, I'll be disconnecting from the internet and everything. I'm actually coming out of the retreat for a bit over a month later in the year, November, December, because I already agreed to do some teachings in Europe, so I'll be going to Europe and doing some retreats and stuff, so I'll be catching up on things then. But apart from that, I'm going to be basically disconnecting. It's too time wasting, you know.
Not
very easy.
Not
ah, not for you. Ah, okay, yeah. So, well, you can have to find some other fun blogs to look at. Another one I found recently is a good one, is Angry Asian Buddhist. Yeah, Angry Asian Buddhist is a really good blog. Yeah. Angry Asian Buddhist, yeah.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, no, they're good. They're good. So that's what I'm going to be doing. So I'm not sure if I'll be back here in Armidale. I may be back again because I'm still in Perth for another few weeks. So may see you again. But then I'll be disappearing for a couple of years. Who knows? Maybe I just like it too much and I'll just stay there.
Maybe it's safe.
Maybe, yeah.
Well, if you don't happen to get back here again, we wish you all the luck in the world.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
We'll
yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll be connected.
Well, the
we
four.
Connected.
Sorry?
We will be connected.
Yes, we'll be connected anyway, yeah. The four Nikayas is roughly a million words in Pali. Yeah. So probably something more than that in English.
Yeah.
It'll take you a few hours.
Yeah.
You really
well, it's really just consistency is the thing, you know? Just to keep doing it every day. But, you know, this way I look at it, if you can do a little bit, that's good. Yeah, if I don't complete it, that's all right.
Do you speak any other languages?
Apart from Pali and Sanskrit and Thai. And Lao, no. No. I mean, the main one I know in terms of my studies is Pali, and I can make do with Sanskrit as well. Yeah, it's very closely related. Yeah. Okay, so maybe we're time to finish up. Yep.